You're listening to Have Mike Will Travel with Elizabeth Santry.
Hi, welcome to the show. This episode was recorded in Philadelphia. I paid a visit to the home of Einav Keat and her husband Michael Scott Whitson. This is the house where they launched their brand, Sweet Lucamo. They started a children's apparel brand from scratch. They moved into the house just a few months before they had their son. And it's here that they've taken this house and used it as a collaborative effort to raise a family and to raise this business. The house is really pleasantly lived in with a few toys scattered around. And there's a really great energy going on. Mike was kind enough to take their little son, Luca, out for a bit so that I could sit down with Einav and really hear their story of how this brand has developed. I really hope you enjoy this episode. So thanks for having me. And I also appreciate, I know it was a bit tough, but you had your little one leave to give us a little bit of quiet time for the episode.
It's so quiet when he leaves.
But I appreciate that. I mean, that's just the reality of what you're doing with your home. And you've made it, like I said, it's a play space, you know, it's a workspace, and it's a home. That's a lot to ask out of a house.
Out of 1,400 square feet.
Yeah. How long have you guys been here?
We have been in this home 3.5 years. It would be 4 years this fall, but we're going to be moving to a bigger home.
Mm. So why don't you back me up and take me through, you know, as quick as you want, highlight what brought you ultimately to Philadelphia?
Well, I grew up in the burbs, in the main line. And then when ended up going out to school in Colorado, I was out there for about 7 years. And I feel like I loved it out there. It was so beautiful. It was just picturesque. It was clean. It was felt safe. But all along, I always felt like it was missing that Philly East Coast grit energy that, like, you know, I'd grown up with. It always just felt like a necessity or part of life. So after grad school, I got a job in New York for a few months working at a magazine online.
So can I interrupt you? Yeah. What did you study? Like, specific titles, just to get people's picture of your journey, professional journey. You studied?
Undergrad was environmental studies. Grad school was print journalism.
Print journalism.
So nothing related to what I'm doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, backing it up, I'd been sewing since I was a teenager. I'd always loved making things, making curtains, making hippie dresses, making pillow covers. It was just something I always had a little project going. But, you know, that was just always a side thing. And, you know, I'd never really thought about going to school for fashion. It just wasn't something that ever crossed my mind. And I really, at some point, really saw myself being like a serious journalist type. You know, I thought National Geographic or something like that. That was just really the career I had pictured for myself. And, you know, 2007, 2008, you know, print journalism was flagging. I graduated from grad school in 2007, and the commencement speech for my department was this blogger who was just sitting there telling everyone why print journalism was dying. And you just saw the faces of all these parents in the audience wondering what they just paid for, because it was like undergrad and grad school for the journalism department, communications department, and you just saw all these faces fall.
It's weird. The event ticket said a graduation, yet this is a massacre.
Yeah. And there, you know, so, and me too. I was, you know, I had had it in my head that I was going to work at magazines. And I'd even, so I had a job lined up with Rodale for a few months. It was like a summer job. It turned into a freelance thing. But in New York for web editorial, and I had really been gunning for like a print editorial position, and I was really on the fence about taking web editorial, but it was the first thing that came along, and it was Rodale, and it was working in New York, and I went for it. But there was this part of me right then, that was the day I decided to stop being a magazine writer. And, you know, I'd worked at a magazine during grad school out in Colorado. It was a national, like, natural health magazine. And I had worked at, like, local newspapers and done some freelancing and everything, but, you know, it just, even at that point, the industry was coming down. So then on top of it all, the recession hit, and, you know, it was just, it was really, really hard to pursue that career. It got increasingly harder, especially when I did decide to leave New York, which, you know, working there for a few months was kind of all I needed just to realize that I wasn't thriving in New York. It was so, the cost of living was so high, and I was lucky to have friends and family to stay with, because it was meant to be a temporary thing until I decided what to do. And by the time that temporariness of it ran out, I just didn't want to be a permanent New York person.
Yeah, because, and I bring up location part of a couple points within conversations with my guests, because I think, A, finding your people and finding your place, I think is such an important part of the creative life, because just the way that the world works, it's not good or bad, it just is that creative tends to be the second option, that more academic, more I don't streamline, I don't know how to phrase it, but that creative seems to be the, you know, the option B. And so you have to go and kind of carve it out. And I think it's important for people to know, you know, how other people are handling it. And to, and I think that's important that you say you kind of knew. You knew that New York wasn't it. You know, when it's so many people, it is. And so that's important to listen to yourself.
I get that. I just, New York has an allure for me, but not to live in and not to work in. I understand it completely. I think I just, I knew that Philly, a lot of people don't know Philly, but having grown up in the area, I knew that Philly has so much of what New York has, but with a livability, you can afford to live here. There's enough work here.
Well, speaking of work, tell me how you, so you're equipped with graduate degree, so that you've got the education. Now you've got the experience as well. You've seen what it can be like on a New York level. Talk me through coming to Philadelphia, which some people can call, like, you know, a B-side city. It's, it's a smaller city. And how did that transition go for you, where it was on a smaller level and still finding competitive work that lived up to your expectations?
It was hard. For the first 6 months to a year of being back in Philly, I was freelancing from home for Rodale in New York. And I got really lucky that I was able to do that for a while. And then as some of the contract work was running out, I started just looking for jobs around here. And this was before the recession hit. And I accepted a job in like kind of medical publishing, just because I was like, you know, I need a job. At that point, you could still think, I'll just take the job that comes along and keep looking for something else if I'm not happy. And then within a few months, you know, the recession started. I saw friends of mine just dropping like flies, losing their jobs every week. I was hearing about someone else every day almost for a while there. And, you know, I had that stability of the corporate job with the benefits for a few years. And I was just freelancing like crazy on the side. I did book projects, writing and editing books, Grit City. I was still doing online freelancing, writing online articles, writing for some magazines occasionally. So I was like hustling it, you know, and it wasn't even the financial, I just wanted to stay in the game, and I didn't want to only have that 9-to-5 because it wasn't fulfilling, and it became increasingly unfulfilling. And I was also looking for work. I was applying for jobs, and this was, again, during the recession, so everybody was applying. I would apply for a job, and I would hear back, and they would say, well, we had 300 resumes. We're talking to 10 of y'all. And I was like, well, that's great that I'm one of the 10, but then inevitably, they were in a position where they could just get someone for super cheap. You know, people at that point were taking any job they could get. A lot of times, I didn't want to start taking a pay cut. So I ended up staying in this job where I wasn't happy. I wasn't creatively challenged. So I just kept freelancing just to keep that wheel in motion. And then we got lucky because when I got pregnant with Luca, we had benefits. I had some maternity leave. And that's a whole other story.
When did Philadelphia feel like home? Or the fact that you grew up in suburban Philadelphia, did it always since the second you got
here? Philly always felt like home. I feel like, I think I remember as early as 14, and, you know, if my parents listen to this, they'll crack up. But, like, my friends and I used to get on the train and come down here when our parents didn't know we were doing that. We just came down here to go shopping, you know, because...
But the big city,
But it was the big city. This was when Urban Outfitters still carried, like, tons of vintage stuff. It was over on Rittenhouse Square, and it was meant, you know, where Anthropology is now. So we'd come down here. We'd go to vintage places. We'd go to Urban Outfitters before there was one at the King of Prussia Mall. it was, like, shopping. It was walking around. It was eating. It was... just something to do because the suburbs were boring and it was easy enough to hop on the R5.
And I think that's a common story because I don't know if it's just our generation, because I'm seeing a shift now in the articles that I'm reading that not everybody is running to the big cities the way it was the dream, you know, and now that your big city to wherever it is you live can be sufficient creatively and professionally, and that's really great. And I think that's a positive story to remind people that... your zip code doesn't necessarily have to define you.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Philly's been on the come up for a long time, and it's kind of been under the radar just because it's Philly and it's always in New York's shadow, or, you know, people forget it's like the second biggest city on the East Coast. So, you know, but Philly, I feel like even when I was in New York and I'd come, or in rather in Colorado and I'd come back to visit, I was always like, wow, guys, so much is happening here. And, you know, my friends who were still here were like, yeah, you know, it's Philly. Mm-hmm. But I always was like, wow, you know, Philly has like this amazing potential. And even now I feel like we're seeing it so much, like so much, new, you know, new jobs, new industries, new growth, new development. Like the city just feels like it's, a lot of it's gentrification, which I know people have like a love-hate thing for, but a lot of it's just improvement, you know, the rundown parts. You go through a neighborhood and you're like, wow, 5 years ago, this was a shitty neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And now you can't buy a house for $300,000 here.
Yeah, bittersweet story.
Yeah, and that's happening all around Philly. It's crazy. Yeah. But it's nice to see that people are choosing to live here, you know. And I know that we go through it now, especially now that we have a kid. People are leaving the city because the schools, and, you know, we've chosen to stay and figure it out with private or charter schools. But I feel like we're pretty adamant about staying for a while. Mm-hmm. We're happy here. So when we think about going to the suburbs, it doesn't feel right.
Oh, okay. And, yeah, you know, and that's what you got to do. Follow that instinct. Talk me through the, you know, internal dialogue that gets you where you are today with the business idea and the shift in career. I think that is so scary to so many people. And yet it sometimes happens whether you like it or not. What, you know, falling out of love with your career can sometimes happen in a way that you never anticipated.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to tell people about.
I wouldn't say I fell out of love with journalism, and there's a lot of days where I miss it.
Okay.
I miss it so much, but, and I'm not even going to say that I feel like journalism fell out of love with me. It just, things changed. The industry changed, and the industry I thought I was going into is not the industry.
I see.
It is today, and which is okay. You know, I think it's cool. It's like more people have voices. There's blogs, yada, yada.
But you can't predict the future.
You can't predict the future, and you got to work, and you got to put food on the table. You know, so I had just made a choice, you know, job-wise, to be in corporate publishing and just freelance on the side. But the corporate publishing was not my place. It just wasn't day one. I remember walking into that job, and I was there over 4 years. And I just, from the day one, I was like, this is not right. But, you know, I, like I said, we had good, all the good benefits and everything, you know, with having a baby. But they had this history of being really flexible with new moms and letting moms work from home. And I had coworkers whose kids were 2 or 3 years old who were still working from home part-time.
Wow.
So I won't, like, you know, name names or anything. But, you know, when it came time for, you know, during my pregnancy to talk to my boss, I said, you know, can I do the same thing? And they said, yeah, totally. You know, that's not going to be a problem. And sure enough, you know, I'm in my maternity leave, and it's starting to, you know, a couple weeks are, you know, the last couple weeks of the maternity leave. And I called my boss or emailed my boss and said, you know, it's time to come back soon. Just wanted to see, you know, do you want to set me up with a laptop soon? If there's anything you want me to get started on sooner than, you know, I can get started on. And he completely denied that he had had this conversation with me. They basically, what happened was, I think they decided to either stop offering this to people, or they were, you know, they were just trying, for whatever reason, at a time when more and more people are trying to be a bit more progressive about this stuff, they actually got regressive about it. Mm-hmm. And I was like the poster girl for it. So, and instead of just saying, hey, yes, we told you you could do this, but we can't do this for you right now, they lied through their teeth. They lied to HR. You know, they lied that there weren't any laptops, whereas there were like stacks of laptops in this room that were just sitting there. There was a lot done and said where I basically, you know, and I was a breastfeeding mother. And right. I was like, you know, I was supposed to be sitting in this pumping room 3 days a week in the office. And so it was really traumatic, actually, because, you know, we hadn't planned on me being
right
out of the house 5 days a week. And I had enough vacation days where I could basically, or sick days and whatever, when it was time to go back to work, I was at the office 3 days a week, and then I was home 2 days a week. And they gave me like a small number of work from home days, which I burned through within a month or two. And I think I ended up going back to the job for just about 2 more months, and I quit. Mm-hmm. It just was too hard. And it was just really hard to go to work every day feeling like, wow, either you don't value me as a person, or you are forcing me to quit, whatever the game was, or you are trying to be shitty to moms. And at that point, you know, once you become a mom, you just realize how shitty moms are treated in the States. And people expect you to just like pop a baby out and go back to work. And childcare is expensive. And a lot of times by the time you finish paying for childcare, you've eaten up more than like half your take home salary, mm-hmm. you know? So I got lucky that I got a bunch of new freelance work. I was like, cool, I'm going to do a little freelance. I'll quit this job. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, during my pregnancy, I had just gotten really into, you know, kids' clothes. And once I had a boy, I was horrified by what was out there for boys. It was terrible. And it just, like, was this little spark, you know. And I would laugh because I would start finding stuff in the girls' section. And I was like, am I allowed to shop for a boy in the girls' section? I would bring stuff home, you know, for Luca. I'd be like, oh, good, I found him. Mike didn't know. And I was like, I'm not going to tell him I bought this in the girls' section. But it just so many ideas about, you know, kids' clothing and why is it so shitty and you know, why can't there be more unisex stuff and why does it all have to be made in China and why, you know, why can't more of it be organic cotton? These just questions started coming up for me. Mm-hmm. So I was, like, scouting out things I loved, you know, picking up stuff here and there. And then I hadn't really done any sewing since I was pregnant, and I was like, like make some stuff, you know. I feel like I've sewn clothes before.
But what I like is that, yeah, you know, when the chips are down, a lot of people, no judgment, but it's easy to be consumed with what you're not getting, how this is not fair, or yeah, frustrated, and some that actually has like a scientific ability to cloud creative thoughts and like, yeah, positive ideas and to rejuvenate or to innovate. And so it's really exciting that, you know, you were able to have, you know, you're also talking about hormones.
Oh, my gosh.
Pregnancy.
Oh, my God, the hormones.
You're feeling lied to and
And you're not sleeping because you have a baby. Yeah.
You know, and it's, you've got real money concerns and all this real, yes, anxiety-induced thoughts. And then to have the clarity to see opportunity, I think that's fantastic.
I think it was, I mean, it sounds so corny, but it was all for Luca. You know what
I see.
Mean?
Like, it probably helps when there's like a bigger picture.
Yes, he was very motivating. And I think at that point, like, especially when I left that job, my thought was, I never want him to see someone treat me shitty. You know, I never want him to feel like, you know, my mom is weak or my mom, I don't know. There were just these little moments where I was like, I'm going to do this for you. You know, I'm going to stay home for you. I'm going to figure something out for you. And I want to dress you cool. You know, that was, you know, Mike and I were not like fashionistas or anything, but we, you know, we have a certain aesthetic and it extends to your kid, you know. And I know for a lot of people, like, no judgment if someone just wants to put their kid in whatever.
Right. But you're creating the option if, yeah, that people want to.
Absolutely. Because, you know, it's kids. They spit up, they poop, right, they spill food. A lot of times, you know, you have to ask yourself, why bother with nice kids clothes?
Right.
But, you know, there's workarounds, there's dark fabrics, there's, you know, things that are washable, and there's a way to dress them nice and cool and, you know, make it wearable.
Yeah,
it doesn't all have to be, you know, fancy. It's right, basically all about things that they can wear day to day that still look cool.
Yeah, I like, yeah, to ask people about identity because I think and I'm not gonna suggest, I'm not always a fan of necessarily labels, but I think, yeah, people in the creative industry need identities as a way to mark who they are, what they do, mm-hmm, for other people to understand. Mm-hmm. So when, or has it happened at all, identifying as a designer or identifying into textiles, into fashion, mm-hmm, you know, this, because something that was just a hobby is now your business.
Yeah. It didn't happen in this, like, we sat down and talked about it kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of just the first stuff I made, I would find cool fabrics that I loved and buy them up. And I made some stuff for Luca and then I made stuff for his friends. And then people said, you should open an Etsy. And that's really just how it started.
Okay.
But we'd be out with Luca and the thing we would always hear people say is, oh, I wish I had like those leggings in my size. And that was like the repeated thing. Oh, I wish that came in my size. And for Mike and I, that was always, when we were talking about this and working on stuff, the little thing in the background was, it should be something you wish came in your size, you know. And when you're out with your kid, whatever you have on, whatever they have on, it's nice when you feel like, you don't have to be twinning, but it's nice when you feel coordinated with your kid. So if we love, you know, blacks and grays, then we've gravitated toward lots of blacks and grays. And it's really just been an extension of our aesthetic in kid stuff without making kids seem not in an adult way.
I know what you're saying.
You know?
I know what you're saying. And, I mean, I don't know if you've realized you've sort of created this conversation about gender identity
mm-hmm.
and that the option of not having to have a protocoled
yeah.
gender identity through, you know, the big corporate American identity where it has right. to be pink or blue. And I think
right.
it's, you know, I think
princesses and trucks, which is funny because I remember thinking, like, I don't want boy stuff covered in trucks. And my kid, as you can see in my living room, it is covered in trucks. As soon as he had a choice in what he liked,
yeah.
he just was like, I love trucks. I love motorcycles. I love cars.
Yeah.
He would love nothing more than if I put him in a truck shirt every day. And, like, we've found some cool ones, you know. But at the same time, you know, I think that gender neutrality is really fun to play with. If I have a tank top or a pair of leggings and I see a customer pair it with, you know, that or that, and they make it a boy's outfit or a girl's outfit, that's so cool, you know. And I think also the ability to have something that, you know, a few kids can wear. If you have a boy and next you have a girl, but that pair of leggings still applies to a girl's wardrobe.
And you've hit on something in addition that's so great about your brand is, you know, the efficiency, because
yeah.
it doesn't have to be, and parents get to reuse clothes.
Yes.
That's got to be really helpful to their bank account.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had friends who had a girl, and then when it comes, they have a second baby, it's a boy, they have to clear out almost every single piece that they have
mm-hmm.
for this second baby's wardrobe. And I look at a lot of the stuff I have saved of Luca's, and more than half of it, I would say, I could put on a girl if I had a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's, you know, I feel like people throw stuff away or donate it, and that's great, you know. But if you can hang on to stuff and give it a second life, and, you know, the memories that you have of your first kid in it, and then, you know, building new memories on that little shirt or that little sweater or something, it's so cute. I love that.
Yeah,
you know?
I think hand-me-downs is a nice, cute, sentimental thing to have with siblings.
Yes.
It's just sort of a family. I get
yeah. Some items don't stand the test of a few months, you know.
Right.
There's, but, you know, when they do, it's nice.
So I want to know, did your brand develop organically, or did your previous work / career, whatever you want, you know, your experience in life, did you know I have to start making certain brand decisions now that will make my, you know, my company be seen or be understood? Because, I mean, essentially, I always kind of wrap up branding as an identity, just so that people can process, like, who the heck you are, what
yeah.
the hell you're doing.
Yeah.
And they can make sense of it really quickly, because you want that make sense moment to happen so that people will then trust you and start doing business with you.
Yeah.
Was it fast or really slow?
A little bit of both. I mean, I think even by the time I said, okay, I'm going to start an Etsy page, we're like, shit, we got to do a logo, we got to do,
right.
you know, labels.
Decisions have to be made.
Decisions have to be made. And a lot of them were like, boom, you know, our little logo, the SLM heart, that's actually kind of a little nod to the Love statue at Love Park. So maybe Philly people get that. Maybe people outside of Philly don't get that. But there were little things that we wanted to embed into it. This is a Philly brand. We feel very proud of that. We feel pretty adamant about being known as a Philly brand because it's not common.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we meet a ton of makers around here, but we haven't necessarily felt like this is like an epicenter for fashion or kids fashion or anything the way New York or California
mm-hmm.
are. So, and then a lot of it was along the way. I mean, like I said, I went into this knowing nothing, but like what I was equipped with was having that reporter's ability to research. So, you know, I feel like a lot of times I've since in the last, you know, year, especially gotten questions from people starting their businesses and asking me, how do you do this? Where do you do that? I never asked anyone anything, and I don't say that to sound like a shithead, like I did it on my own.
Right.
But I've been so programmed and trained through my previous work to when if I have a question, I look it up online, and I Google, and I've
What
called.
Is it? Google that shit? It's
Yeah, Google that shit. Yeah, exactly. You know, I've had times where I've called, you know, we work with like a fabric printer in California that make all our custom prints, and when we were looking for the fabric printer to work with, I called the manufacturer that makes some of this equipment, and I asked them who carries your equipment.
Oh.
And who uses this printing process in the States. I've called, you know, fabric mills. Tell me about your fabric. Send me swatches. And it's just like footwork. So I guess I was used to doing the footwork, and so that was good for me with this because mm-hmm. it was what I was – it didn't seem like a drag. It was interesting. I'm a curious person,
mm-hmm.
so –
I love connect the dot stories.
Totally.
Because I refuse to get into regret. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I just plow forward, do my thing, look forward. And I love when it all kind of works out.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I love about your social media exposure for your brand is the fluidity, the conversation style, but yet this tone of voice of I want to say authority. It does sound, you know, but there's this strong voice that you know how to put your words together.
Hmm.
And, you know, I'm just so glad that able to thread into this brand with this, you know, writing experience, because it shines through your talent for writing, you know.
Thank you.
I love that. Not everybody can do that.
It's like my little tiny writing outlet is like an Instagram caption or the emails I get to write to customers or whatever it is. And there's not always time or space for it. Sometimes you just got to post something up. You're like, I don't even know what to freaking say anymore. How many words are there for cute?
Right.
You know, like I'm always like, it's cute. Fuck. I don't know. Want 50 new words for cute. Cause I'm so tired of posting up this adorable photo of someone's kid in our stuff and just being like, I feel like I've said this the same way 5,000 times.
Yeah.
Now. So that is like the downside.
Maybe that could be another project. You could write a book, a thesaurus on like the overused words in your industry and help people.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. Like, you know, it's always like, check out this cutie rocking my this. It's like, how many times can you write that caption? But I read it 1,000 times a day from other people, and I don't blame anyone. I'm sure everyone feels the same way.
Right.
Fuck, I just have to post this photo. I'll just post like this. I'm cursing a lot in this
interview.
No,
for sure. Please do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, el natural.
Okay, the kid's gone, so.
Yeah. So I really love to bring in uncertainty. I just think it's a really important theme throughout all the episodes. It's just so important to be, you know, honest about what you're going through. And I think people can really benefit. You're just, you know, a really easy person to talk to. So I was wondering if we could get into, you know, how was it for you to, okay, it's one thing to have this hobby in your back pocket. Mm-hmm. And you've got this sewing thing. And it's something that you realize you can do during your pregnancy. But it was just meant for your son. How do you take something and actually try to contribute in a professional arena and know that what you're doing is not only good,
mm-hmm.
it's unique,
mm-hmm.
it's you know, wearable, sellable, and that you're actually contributing? You know, there had to have been a lot of uncertainty.
Oh,
about
my
that.
Gosh. All of the above. I remember like making this first little pair of Luca's leggings and you know, kind of making the pattern on my own and making them one night when he was sleeping. The next morning I put them on him and they were loose in the wrong spots and they were long and short or whatever. And I was like, all right, back to that,
yeah.
You know, back to the drawing board. So from that moment on, I mean, everything's been tested. I mean, going from having a business where I was making some things at home to now a business where our stuff is locally, professionally made.
I see.
Has been a big jump that each time has been terrifying. You know, like, okay, this is scary. You're investing money into stock, and, you know, into producing a lot more up front. You know, we shifted from having, obviously, starting out as a tiny Etsy business to, you know, becoming a business that's more than half wholesale.
Mm.
And that really just started from one person one day emailing me saying, hey, do you do wholesale? And me thinking, do I do wholesale? What is wholesale? Again, let me Google this. How the F do you do wholesale? And learning about the wholesale business, I got lucky that a friend of mine who is in fashion merchandising, a few months into everything, I think I made stuff for her kids as well, and she basically said, like, I want to help you with this.
I was just going to ask, at what point, do you have a soundboard, and at what point did you know you needed one, and how did you find one? Because I think getting professional insight or just having someone to bounce off, is this any freaking good?
Right.
Am I ever going to fucking sell anything?
Yeah.
When did you know?
So it was all Mike and I, you know, from at the beginning, and it was just, you know, like I said, initially it was like found fabrics, and then we started, you know, doing digital, creating our own prints and doing digital things, and luckily Mike is, you know, the creative master of the house, and he does all that work, and we came up with t-shirt designs and blah blah blah. So there were like a lot of little mini stages in between, and every single stage was full of uncertainty. Is this gonna look like how I want it to look? Are people gonna think this is cool? You know, am I gonna love this as much as I think I do? And there's stuff that I've looked back on and felt like, you know, I didn't love that as much. You know, I'm glad we did it because it was a learning thing. But you know, there's no time to really linger on uncertainty, you know, and I say to Mike always laughs because I'm just like, I just found out about myself through all this, and I'm really a just do it person. I'm just like a pull the trigger person and jump and figure it out on the way down kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's been good in the sense that it's helped the business grow quickly and it's helped us learn quickly. I think a lot of it's easy to see how this could have taken twice as long just from indecision, just from hemming and hawing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really feel like I have time. It's like, go, go, go. Mm-hmm. You know, my kid's napping. Let's make 5 big decisions right now.
Well, I've heard parents go through this phase of after they have kids think, how could they have wasted as much time as they did now? You just become this mega efficient person with your time.
Absolutely, totally. Don't get me wrong. We still find time to somehow like binge watch Netflix things, but only after we've done a bunch of work.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like one thing we didn't really talk about, but that seems like kind of glaring to not talk about, is social media. Because it's been the only reason we've come this far.
Ah, I see.
You know, not having, not coming into it with the advertising budget and a massive business plan.
Mm-hmm.
It's all just really been social media driven, which is great. It's a community of, there's so many parents and so many moms. I mean, I say parents to be democratic, but it really is, I want to say 98% moms who follow me, who I follow, you know, their businesses. It's pretty incredible. It's kind of like this little revolutionary little community that's bringing things back here, bringing things back to homemade. It's democratized children's clothing for sure, children's accessories, toys. It just feels like all the people out there who've had good ideas can actually pull the trigger on them now.
It seems nice because people of our specific age group have had the blow of the recession, you know, in terms of you got yourself all set up, and that's just timing. You couldn't have planned that, and like we got kicked in the stomach, you know, on
but
a career
I think
level.
It made a lot of people really resourceful.
And all, but also I love that the idea that, and now here we are, where we are with social media and what it can do. It's like this luck timing thing,
yeah,
you know, because everything eventually will be oversaturated or change or shift, and you're just
absolutely
at the right place at the right time doing the right thing.
Absolutely,
in some
that
ways
is, that and that is why, you know, I've seen the light in terms of also focusing on the wholesale end of business and working with showrooms, because if Instagram were to go the way of MySpace, I wouldn't want my business to die with it.
Right.
And I, unfortunately, you know, everything kind of comes and goes, and it's probably not going to be the thing that's around in 20 years. That's just natural. But it is, it's really cool. You know, if you can really keep yourself out of the numbers game in terms of how many followers do I have and how many likes did I get and all that, and if you can just enjoy it for what it is and not worry about, you know, there's definitely some competitiveness in there, and but there are also some incredible people. There's people who we're collabing with now. There's you know, a lot of the shops we work with are just run by people like us. They're just families and moms, and they started a business, and they started an online kids store or a, you know, a brick and mortar shop or whatever it is. And I think the people who are there saying, okay, we're all in the same boat, we're all just here trying to figure it out, it's pretty cool that we can all support each other
the
way we do. So it's really, it's been invaluable. I wouldn't be anywhere without all of that.
No, I appreciate you kind of revealing the recipe. I mean, that's important.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I mean, you see it so much now, you know, and it was the same way with YouTube, the way YouTube created musical stars and TV stars and stuff like that. It just, creativity getting democratized. People get to vote with their likes and their watches and their views.
It's also instant feedback to your brain.
It's,
you know,
absolutely,
you're making a bad choice,
feedback.
You'll know right away.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and it's cool. You know, it has its drawbacks, and it can be time consuming. That's like a whole, takes a lot of time to be on there and communicating with your customers. And
for sure. Well, the thing is that what you're doing is, you know, you're covering a lot of different areas that are worth so much time to talk about and get involved. And I love that you're so open about doing that, but there's just literally not enough time on my show to cover all of it.
I know, that's okay. That's okay, I know. I'm sure I'll be long-winded with someone else at another point.
Right. It's like eventually the whole story will get out there.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But it is fun to be able to share this stuff. I sort of, I'm not 1,000% comfortable talking about it all yet, but I realize if I talk to my friends or family about it, it's, you know, the same thing. It's just important to share the story, talk about it, be open, honest.
I think it does strengthen your identity the more, you know, firm you are about it and put the story out there. It just kind of solidifies what you're doing. I think, I mean, I do believe in the messages of this show with sharing insight and helping other people. I really, really appreciate you having me here today.
Yeah, I really appreciate you coming. I can't wait to keep listening.
Thanks.
thanks for listening. Be sure to show your support through comments and reviews.